that were caught in traffic, and some of your staff that were caught in traffic as well. That already gave us our first delay. The second is that we then looked at making sure that we have at least five provinces here, because that would enable us to then pass whatever work we have done. I'm not saying pass the bill, because I know that there might be amendments that we might accept the bill as it is. We have made arrangements now where there's three members here from Northwest, Northern Cape, as you would have noticed, and Gauteng. We will, in all probability, we will definitely be joined by another member from Western Cape who has been caught in traffic. Then we have yet in Parliament a member from Eastern Cape who will join us now just to come and sign the register for whom you may need an effect. And then another part of the contingency is we then communicated with an alternate member from the Free State. So we may in fact have six members on the attendance register. But ideally I want, when we eventually make the final decision, that we should have at least five full-time members in-house. Right, so that would happen, because we have three now. One is definitely coming any minute, and then the first one is going to be come from the airport now, and then the sixth one is also in the building, which is come and be on a emergency standby. I just need to say about the sixth one, the woman that we've been talking about. She is a full-time member of this committee, have been participating in the committee, and there was a loss of a member to death, and therefore she's standing in another committee now, where you know that in Parliament, particularly in the NCLP, you cannot be confined to serve on one select committee. Most of us are serving more than one select committee. That said, let me welcome you, appreciate your presence here today, reiterate that what has happened last week was that we had a presentation on AGREMA, so we actually looked at AGREMA. I bumped into the minister, and the minister indicated, the Minister of Public Works indicated that he doesn't know why we call it AGREMA, why we're using a French term for it, but he was appreciative of the fact that our contribution as the NCOP. That said, I must just say that we also have an apology from the DDG. He's the DDG. And he has delegated Mr. Devan Panay to stand in and represent the department in his essence here. We noted last week already that what is going to be important is that we have people with legal expertise and insight to help us. We particularly want to thank that the Department of Public Works, that you have availed two people with such skills to the committee. We also want to thank Parliament that they have made sure they had someone here last week, and then again have someone there today to make sure that the apology in terms of the legal aspect of the law. Is the office of the state law advisor? Okay. Okay, they're both the state law advisors. But I'm trying to establish, are you both from the state of because you're sitting there so comfortably with colleagues from the Department of Public, but you thought that you are the same. Apologies for that. Thanks for the correction. State law advisors. Then, if I may propose a process, which also what we deliberated on last week, where we said we will go through it clause by clause. We all have hard copies before us. Then there is also the document that will be shown on the screen. We will not go through reading every clause of the document. It's just going to take us too long. So we will look at the clause, and then we will allow members to indicate whether there are any amendments that needs to be made on the clause. So the protocol would be, if there are no amendments proposed, it is considered that the clause is accepted as it is before us.
Point 6.6, 6.5, yeah. And, way, it's also not extended to social entities. For the tested, you might have to also suppose that this is an entity rather than an entity. So you can not criminalize a domestic tested or an entity.
Okay.
So that's the individual.
Can we get the legal experts to just help us there? Devin, you want to say it?
The company could be a CC, could be a PGY, if any other organization or structure under a national party. It is a point to use the word party to choose the both of national and community.
Honorable Father?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm not sure if I agree, actually, that should we not perhaps just also, just to make it more clear, that you know, to actually define that a person, you know, define and put the definition in there what it includes, because I'm just scared that you don't include it, and the guy comes along and says it's his person, you know, and So I'm just thinking that maybe just to define and clarify that maybe in practice. So the legal guys will most probably be able to say it's non-reform, it's not necessary, but maybe it is good to just further and in brackets what it exactly means so that it's detailed that people can't like on say, but we didn't know that. So it was not defined properly.
The Interpretation Act does provide for a definition of person. So when we speak legally speaking, when we speak about a person, we are speaking about both a natural and a juristic person. So when the court interprets that clause relating to a person, they will know that it's a natural or a juristic person.
Can we?
Are you a lawyer? Yes, yes.
You are a lawyer?
Yes.
And
my
giving that to us as a
lawyer.
Can we have the parliamentary legal advisor to speak to us on that?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I agree with my colleagues in the department and the legal advisor. The Interpretation Act gives a definition of person. It says whenever we use person in the act, it includes the gender, male, female, includes national and juristic person. So it's very broad, we have it there. The risk one runs when we want to specify exactly what it means by accident we can leave something out. And then the Interpretation Act definition will be excluded because we went ahead in this act or bill at this stage to define it. So I would recommend we stick with the Interpretation Act to keep it very broad and in line with the existing jurisprudence. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's do two things. I want to welcome Honourable Lord. He is the delegate from the Western Cape that we have been talking about earlier, who was caught in traffic. Honourable Palmer, you've got it clear. Okay. Honourable Timunia, sorry.
No, Jay, as a bush lawyer, they've got my clear.
Okay. Let's then go to 7. Paragraph 7, renewal of the certificate. We dealt with that last week, that the certificate holder must at least 3 months prior to the expiry apply for renewal. Keeping of a register. I know there were even some long questions on the keeping of a register last week. There it is, within the law, that there will be a register. There were some questions also raised about how members of the public generally would be able to know who's on the register, and that question was also answered for us. Then we go to paragraph 9, the Board of Agreement South Africa, which is the accounting authority with a minimum of 7 members, a CEO, and the CEO is a non-voting member. The appointment of the board members They must be competent persons with the expertise clearly spelled out in the bill. Item 10B talks about the specialist knowledge that they need to have. Item 10.2, the term of office of members. Item 10.3, a selection committee. Item 10.4, what the notice should include. Item 10.5, that the minister must, within 30 days from the date of receipt of the recommendations of the selection committee, appoint the members of the board. Item 10.6, item 10.7, basically this chairperson. Item 10.8, members are appointed in their personal capacity, unlike members of this committee. Item 10.9, the dates, the names of the members of the board, they must appear in the Gazette, part of our open democracy process. Then we go to paragraph 11, the term of office of members of the board, which is 3 years, and they cannot serve more than 2 consecutive terms. The disqualification for membership, which is a normal principle. The rotation of office, item 13, that the minister may terminate on reasonable grounds and after consulting with the members of the board and members' service on the board. Then I think important there is item paragraph 35, that the minister must, within 60 days from the date on which a vacancy on the board arose, appoint a person to hold such vacancy, and a member so appointed also offers for the remainder of the term. And the term is 3 years. What would happen, might be something that will come later. Have you dealt with the issue of continuity of members of the board? I know you've dealt with the other things just today. Is there a need to deal with continuity?
Chairperson, you will recall that in terms of filling up the vacancy, we speak about the selection committee. As part of the process, we develop a regulation that will speak about the continuity, would also speak about duration.
So that will be the regulations of the board. Yeah.
But under normal circumstances, we allow for a minimum of around 30% of the board to remain for more continuity purposes.
Okay.
And just as an point four, it was if there's a vacancy, the person will appoint for the remainder of that particular term. I suppose that they can find that. So it's not, they have not appointed for a new 3 year term. So it'll be in the middle of the term.
What clause are you on? I can't read there, so I'm reading.
I'm on
clause
13. 13,
4. Because my 13 do not have a 4.
It's at the bottom. It's just below the resolution of 4. It's above the resolution of 4.
It doesn't have a 4. The copy that I have. It jumps from 3 to 5. But if you have it there, then it is fine.
So I think it's a correction that you have done. You have done it along with how you may have been
trying. Are we working? No.
Which one is here?
I always think I'm not with you, Chair, but on the screen that's
I just want to make sure that we work from the same...
Yeah.
I think it's the wrong version.
It's just
the B version.
Okay.
Let me work. I don't think it's got copies of the B anymore.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. Are we colleagues, we all have the same copy. That's going to be important. We all have the B. On the front page, there is a B. B3B. That's the one we all have. Okay. Then we go to... Resolution of the board. Remuneration and allowance of board members. It is determined by the minister and it is aligned with people employed by the organ of state. Then he talks about the chairperson. And meetings of the board, paragraph 17. I think what is important there is 17.5, where it says, subject to the approval of the chairperson, a person who is not a member of the board may attend or take part in a meeting, but may not vote. So the open democracy principle applies. Even here. Paragraph 18, conflict of interest of members of board. We spent lots of time on that last week. Paragraph 19, the committees. I think what's important there is 19.5, where the board designates a member of that committee to act as the chairperson. Mm-hmm. Paragraph 20, the chief executive officer, to make sure that that is kept in check. Paragraph 21 is about the staff. Let's look at paragraph 22, where we talk about delegation, that the board can delegate to the CEO. Or a committee, or a staff member, or a member of the board. And then the CEO, in turn, may delegate to a staff member, and then they qualify what such delegation would be. Item 20, paragraph 23, funding and investments. The agreement will be funded by monies appropriated by Parliament. We heard last week about how they would also institute a small fee and how that would contribute to the income of the, can I call it the agency? And then the normal thing is just that we say in item 2033 that they may invest the funds that are not immediately required. That does not mean that they can invest funds from one financial year into another financial year. The PFM will still apply where the funds has to be utilized in the year in which it has been appropriated. Paragraph 24, which deals with financial year and accounting, which is the normal financial years that we have in government. And then paragraph 25, with a breach of confidence. Let's read that. A person who is or was involved in the exercise of power or performance of a duty in terms of this act may not disclose any information which he or she obtained in the exercise of such power or performance of such function. It relates to the conflict of interest, and it also to some extent deals with the question that we have raised last week about what happens when a member of a dreamer is no longer a member of the board. Are they able to go into the construction industry and be employed there? It has been answered, unless Honorable Lund is... Actually, you were here last week. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so we were all here, and we won't have questions on that. But then, clause 26 refers to the limitation of liability. None of AGRIMA employees is liable for any damages or loss caused by the exercise of power or performance of a duty, the failure to exercise a power or perform a duty, unless exercise or failure to exercise the power or performance or failure to perform the duty was unlawful, grossly negligent, or in bad faith. I think that covers it well. The rules of AGRIMA has to be published in the Government Gazette. The item, sorry, paragraph 28 is regulations. We have earlier on spoke about the regulations. So the minister will be in charge of making such regulations. Any of us who know these boards in government know that the regulations could be changed by the minister to improve the performance and outputs of an agency. Paragraph 29, there's the transitional provisions. We have heard that there are already ways in which the responsible behavior of members within the construction industry are being handled. We had a whole range of agencies whose names were given to us here last week. And this clause is to deal with the transition from having all those other agencies to make sure that there is a smooth introduction of AGRIMA. Can't believe it. We're through. Item 30, the short title and commitment. The Act will be called AGRIMA South African Act 2015 and will come into operation on the date determined by the President by proclamation in the Government Gazette. Then there's a memorandum on page 13, which is an integral part of this, where we have the background that was given to us last week. I think the whole memorandum was given to us, as it is here. It's almost like an aggregative summary of what is contained in the book. But let's just go through it again. There is the background. Paragraph 1, paragraph 2 is the purpose of the book. Paragraph 3 is what I have referred to earlier on when we look at the transition, which is the bodies and the organizations that the Department of Public Works have identified and consulted with. Paragraph 4 of the memorandum refers to organizational and personal issues, like conflict of interest and the appointment of members of the board and issues like that. Paragraph 5, very important. This is section 175 and not 176. So when it comes to us, it doesn't mean that we would have to take it to the NCOP for approval. We can take it to the NCOP in terms of the normal processes for information and notice. Legal advisors, just help us on that. And help us with the term as well, so that our secretary can capture the term properly. Are you consulting on the time? Put on the mic, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This is a section 35 of the National Assembly Law.
Of course, it goes through both houses, and I'm sure the parliamentarian might also speak to that. We determined through the constitution whether which parts whether it affects provinces directly, or whether it is governed directly from the executive or the National Assembly. And so on those things we determine whether it is a 75 bill, 76 bill, 77 money bill, or whichever bill it is. So this is a 75 directly from the National Assembly, and also a national executive, and it doesn't affect directly provinces. Jessica Jenkins.
Honourable Chair, please interrupt me if I say things that the committee already knows. But this part of the memorandum, part 7 on the parliamentary procedure, without saying or looking at it, it's a standard provision. It's in terms of the rules that the state law advisors must advise what the procedure in the legislation. The reason for that is that the constitution requires a different voting procedure, amongst others, than it's a 76 bill. 76 bills may also be introduced in the NCOP by a member of the NCOP. 75 bills can be introduced by any member, but also any member of the executive, as the case of this bill. And then the voting in the NCOP takes place in accordance with not the provincial delegations, but with delegates, with persons, the majority of the persons. The quorum is still determined in terms of provinces, but we vote as delegates on the bill in the House. Now, the Constitution is clear that these provisions are mandatory or preemptive, so we have to make the certification. If you follow the wrong procedure, especially if you follow the 75 procedure when the bill was a 76 bill, the Constitutional Court will and has in the past declared that legislation unconstitutional procedural grounds. So it is necessary to make the determination. And the way it works in Parliament is that when the bill comes, we look at legal service, we look at the opinion from the state law advisors, and we write our own opinion then to the what is called the joint tagging mechanism that constituted of the Speaker of the NA, the Chairperson of NCOP, the Deputy Speaker, and the Permanent Deputy Chair of NCOP. They certify the bill then. To follow a certain process in Parliament. That's sort of an official duty that they have to put it there. But it's all under the mandate of the Constitution. So, I don't know if there's anything else I left out or something I can clarify further, please advise.
Thank you very, very much. Can I, before I give you a chance, Honourable Farber, just say that it would have been very helpful if Honourable Pakis, he is the delegate from the Free State, it would have been very helpful if he could hear that. Can I ask you to just summarize, or let me summarize, Honourable Pakis, we have this bill before us. Thanks very much and welcome. Good to have you here.
Can you give Honourable Pakis a copy of the bill?
Honourable Pakis is an alternate member for Free State. Honourable Pakis, what we have here is this Agrima South Africa. It is a Section 75 bill. And Edward Jenkins has just explained to us how we have to deal with the Section 75 bill, that it has already been approved by the National Assembly and has now come to us. And the summary of the explanation is that when it goes to the NCOP, we don't vote as provinces. We vote individually as members on the bill. We have already gone through the bill. We have had a briefing last week and went through it force by force now, and I've just concluded that I think what may be of interest to you is if you look at page 13, which is the, as I called it earlier, is almost like a summary of what is contained in the bill, is like an executive summary. And where we were now, we were at clause number, or we are, at clause number 5, where we looked at the implications for provinces, and the indication there is now. Honourable Father.
Thank you, Chair. As I say, well, it's certainly both ways, but because the joint sagging decides on if it actually then becomes, or if it's going to be a Section 76 or 75 bolt. Now, as we were now talking about this, it just came up to me about a presentation we had last week. And specifically, we were speaking about some plastic tile, for instance, if you remember. Now, I'm going to put you in a catch 22, sir. The problem comes like, if you, for instance, have some wooden product where Honorable Horn comes from in George area where it's humid. Now, that will never work in Northern Cape area where it's dry, because that piece of wooden framework, for instance, you will not be able to standardize it there. Hasn't been banned by implication on provinces. You hear what I'm saying? Because of there, that wooden product, I mean, maybe in the Western Cape 100%. But as soon as you go to the western part of our country, this damage will not apply because it cannot work because of the dryness. It's just like a clip in boss.
Okay, now the clip in the boss comes kick of our pool and it's swimming over some.
Thank you, Jonathan. Joel, from the Ariel, can they add a shot? If that product that you're referring to, wooden product, says the product will do A, B, C, D in the entire South Africa, it will not be said. Because certification is based on what claim made by manufacturer, what product will do. So you really check it throughout the country on the various conditions throughout the country. And if it is for example, it is not going to be applicable in George or KZN or Northern KZN, then the product would not be certified. If they however say that this product will ABC between this particular geographic area, then it makes sense. But the certification is not necessarily based on a provincial standard or a provincial regulation or a municipal regulation. For example, if I use a municipality, when you make inspection, each area, each municipality will have its own specifications to that. Remember, these specifications are built or developed, or some criteria for testing the product is based on what the manufacturer claims the product will do.
Maybe before you do that, Honorable Powell, let me just say that last week I also then made mention about our oversight where we went into Western area, which is a mining area, where there's a lot of shifting of the soil. And the answer there was then also to say that they will not say that the municipality cannot use a pipe made of steel in the area. The prerogative is in the municipality, but what the agreement will do will be to say that this product is suitable to use within this particular environment. Remember, the thing that we raised, let me put it in the context for you, just to help with the discussion. The question was raised to the members of the Department of Public Works yesterday. What happens if a product is certified in another country other than South Africa? Would that product still have to be certified in South Africa? And the answer was yes, it must be. So we are therefore not allowing ourselves to just say that once a product has been certified, that product can be used anywhere.
Thank you, Chair. This is exactly what I was trying to say when I said I kind of clipped in your board call, because the specific thing was that this certain file might work in Europe, but it cannot work here. So we have to create new standards here. Now, if we have one national standard, and you don't go and test it in Upington or in Springbok, now you created the standard, and this product comes to Springbok. And they take, for instance, some type of root truss that they've now, a new root truss, and you say, this is great. But what the dryness says, that this whole type of root truss must be able to endure this. But obviously, I can't believe that they will test it in every province. And this is why I'm asking the question, will it be just a all-over regular, okay, this is okay? Or will it be able for the guy in Springbok to say, listen here, this thing got the mark of quality like the SAB eventually, because it can create a problem.
Let me put it to you this way, and then I'm going to give you an opportunity. Say, let's go to the question of eclectic pipe. We define eclectic pipe for use in the agricultural industry. There is no way that the municipality can then use that plastic pipe for transmitting water in a dungeon. Right. So the certification will not be just a blanket one. There would be certain qualifications in it. But speak more to that, if you could. And then we'll have Honorable, our Advocate Jenkins as well. But let's have you first and then have Advocate Jenkins.
Thanks, Chef. Chef, I think you said the left on the certification is as we use the fit for purpose. And the fit for purpose is the fact. So the manufacturer will say, this product is A, B, C, D. They'll take into account all weather conditions if he wants to, or you may specify the weather conditions. So if you recall when I was using the example of the town, I said they will test it for various temperatures. I mean 50 degrees, plus 50 degrees Celsius, all the way to minus 50 degrees Celsius. So it's able to accommodate. If it's able to pass that range, then they're able to say it is good for our Africa because this is the range of our temperature. Like for example, I'll test it for all weather conditions, hail, various sizes of hail, etc., etc. So when we certify fit for purpose, it is already defined in terms of what to do. If you also recall, I mentioned in terms of the certification, if it is used for anything outside of that certified, it cannot be used. That's, I'm hoping I covered that.
Thank you very much. Honorable Jenkins.
Thank you, Chairperson. The tagging exercise, it's because of what you said, the question from your father is legitimate. We have come, I think my colleagues and SAGO advisors will agree, they can feel free to disagree, we've come a long way with this thing called tagging or classification of legislation. There's been a number of cases that went against Parliament, there's a number that went for Parliament, so the courts have paid some attention to it, and there's probably more coming in the future. I'll try and keep it very short, sir. Of course, we know that the National Parliament has what's called plenary legislative power. So we can make legislation on anything except where the Constitution allocates that power to somebody else or another entity like a provincial legislature or a municipality, which is, and the Constitution has those schedules 4 and 5, which sets up concurrent competencies for provinces and national, and 4 and 5 certain exclusive competencies of provinces and municipalities, although national can still intervene there under certain circumstances. So it gets a little bit technical. Now, when the court was seized with these technical arguments, first of all, they said, look, we need to look at the purpose of the legislation to find out what this is really, what the legislation is doing, this specific legislation. And based on that, we would say it falls in 75, 76. However, the court has said, most legislation will affect provinces in some way. So they came up with what's called a substantial measure test, in a certain way. But remember, we are dealing with the bill in front of us. So that was the so-called Mulwana case that's referred to in the memorandum. There was another case that's very interesting. The deer was involved there. I'm just mentioning that. The fact that the Transnet case, or the OSA case, in Western Cape, where they challenged the transport laws amendment. And there the court said, look, we cannot do consequences as infinitum, if I can paraphrase in my own words, that the bill will have. And I think that's what we're talking about here. Many pieces of legislation can have consequences, but the court says we're looking at the substantial effect of text in front of us, the purpose of that. That means it will have consequential effects is a fact, but that's not that relevant for the classification to remain constitutional, to remain compliant with the Constitution. It's a valid question, but it's not going to affect the dragging. If one can do is raise that question, even to the board, and there's oversight of the board, to say, how are you going to deal with these issues? And how do you take these kind of differences between provinces and climate and humidity into consideration, as well as soil, as you said, which is a major thing. I mean, if the foundation shakes, the whole building comes down.
Thank you very much. Well, Pablo, we're dealing with two issues. The tagging as well as the specification. Are you okay with that? Can I just raise from a different angle?
big question of sophistication with you. For me, what is nice about the way in which it is unfolding now is that you're not going to have different standards in different provinces. You're going to have one South African standard. And it helps us deal with a whole range of other possible complications that may surface in practical terms. That you have one agency using a common standard, whether the product is manufactured in Cape Town or whether it is manufactured in Mpumalanga. We're not going to have the excuse of saying that no, this province is not as advanced and therefore we need to have a little bit more understanding of the quality. No. The standard and the certification is going to be standardized. I can't say the standard is standardized, but certification will be standardized. Do you have anyone to speak on that, or can we go to the next class? Okay. Then we look at law number 6, which is going to be financial implications. I think it's very important for us. We did indicate earlier that it will receive money appropriated by Parliament and will generate funds through inter alia fees, donations, grants, contributions, and interest on investments, which we have also looked at last year. So it's not going to be an extra burden on the fiscus. It is going to be consolidating efforts that are presently being taken on. And the parliamentary procedure, Honourable Jenkins have spoken, sorry, Advocate Jenkins has spoken to that, but let's just read it so that we can convince ourselves as well. Let me read 7.1. The tagging of votes is dealt with in Section 75 and 76 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996. Section 75 provides for the procedure to be followed regarding ordinary votes which are not affecting provinces, while Section 76 provides for the procedure to be followed regarding ordinary votes which are affecting provinces. See in this regard also the Constitutional Court case of ex parte, the President, in reconstitutionality of Likable 2000, brackets 1, BCLR 1, brackets CC, and Bongwani and others versus National Minister for Agriculture and Land Affairs and others 2010, brackets 8, BCLR 741, brackets CC. I don't think that the brackets helped us in any way, but just draw the distinction between the 75 and 76. I think before us there is no serious expression whether it should be 75 or 76. We are just saying that it's important for us as a committee that we understand that if it is a 75, it does not disadvantage the communities or the provinces that we are representing in this parliament. And I, with your permission, then, colleagues, jump to 7.5. And say the Department of Public Works and the Office of the State Law Advisor are for the opinion that it are of the opinion that it is not necessary to refer the bill to the National House of Traditional Leaders in terms of Section 18.1A of Traditional Leadership and Commons Framework Amendment Act of 2003, since it does not contain provisions pertaining to customary law or customs of traditional communities. Is there any member who would want to speak on that clause? No. Okay. I need advice from my colleague here now. Is this what you're giving to me to read? Honourable members, before I read this, can I just make sure that any of the matters that you may have, questions, comments, have been covered?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm no lord. Let me read to you. The report of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development on ARIMA South Africa Bill, big brackets B, 3B of 2015, brackets S75, dated the 4th of August 2015, that's today's date. The Select Committee on Economic and Business Development, having considered the ARIMA South Africa Bill, referred to it, reports that it has agreed to an amended bill. The amended bill is B35B because the original bill was the one that was given to the National Assembly. So we agree to the amendments that the National Assembly has made to the bill. Are there any members that would have a problem with such an agreement? No. Honourable Farber is all right. Honourable Lord, you are right. Honourable Ntere?
No, sir. If Honourable Farber is okay, then I'm okay.
I see you took the line. Honourable Pakis? Thank you very much. Okay, then I will sign this. Thank you very much for us, for enabling us to continue that in the fashion that we have done. It is now 25 past 11. Can I ask the colleagues not to leave so that you can have at least, we can't get you anything stronger than a black cup of coffee in Parliament. But we again want to say to you, it's been really helpful the way you have prepared yourself for taking us through this process. It has been professional. We appreciate it very much. Please also convey that to your DG and the DGG for the department. When I bump into your minister again, I will be able to say to him that we have done a good job. I know you guys are very busy with all the things that are going to. You are coming to next week again, am I right?
No.
Oh, it's transfer. Oh, I was looking at this appropriation thing, but actually dealing with it and then. Marcy, would you mind holding? We're not going to be more than 3 minutes. Then we can disperse with it. Marcy? Honourable Member, can I request you, Honourable Baba, I need you and Honourable Lord, because it's the three of you that's been here, I'm sorry to do this. We want to adopt the minutes of the 23rd of June. It was a briefing by the Department of Transport on International Convention on Standards of Training, Certification and Watchkeeping of Fishing Vessel Personnel. We had in that meeting myself, Honourable Terry, Honourable Timulia, Honourable Lont and Honourable Fala. We had the opening and the welcome. We had the presentation from the Department of Transport. We had deliberations on the presentation and we had resolutions. Let me read them to you. Department to submit the estimated number of South African fisheries who lost their lives during fishing operation. Have they done that already? Can we ask you to please follow up when I'm on that? The second resolution was the department to update the committee on progress with regard to the Merchant Shipping Amendment Bill. Now that is coming to us next week. The third bullet is the department to submit the list of the countries from SADC region represented on the International Maritime Organization Council that supported South Africa
in ratifying its conventions. Please ask them to give that to us by the latest next week as well. We had the minutes of the last meeting that was adopted, that was item 3, and then we had the closure and the adjournment of the meeting at 11 o'clock. Can I get a proposal for the acceptance of the minutes?
Honorable Chair, I propose acceptance.
Proposal of the Father, second. Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Then, Honourable Members, we also have the minutes of last week before us, which was the formal briefing by the Department of Public Works on the Grima South Africa Bill. We had present in the meeting last week myself, Honourable Tebe, Honourable Timunia, Honourable Lomt, and Honourable Fada. We were not all five of us present when we came at the stage where we needed to adopt the minutes. So we felt that let's not adopt that other minute then. But let's look at this minute. Honorable Lund, can I continue with the minute? Okay. We had the opening and welcome. We had the presentation from the Department of Public Works on the GRIMA. We had deliberations on that. And then we had the announcements that they will present to us clause by clause this week, which is what we have done. And then we also concluded that meeting at 12:30. Can I have a proposal then? Any amendment? Proposal on the law? Second on the 10.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, the last thing, Honourable Members, that we need to look at is the draft program for the OSI. Has the program been shared, the draft program, been shared with the members of the committee? The hard copy is being shared with you now. Can I run you through it to say that Monday is our normal constituency day, but we are hoping that we would travel so that we could be in Northwest by 5 o'clock that afternoon. So we are asking you to give us some of the time of your constituency period. I will take you now, Honourable Baba. Can I say that it means that everybody has to travel to O.R. Tambo, and from there, Martins, if I'm correct, from there we will travel by road. You will fly direct to Pilanza. Okay.
Yes, sir. On Tuesday morning, the go direct flight to there. So, it will be easier flying direct from Cape Town to there. And then on Friday, we will move with the whole group because we're going to be busy according to our secretary that we will be busy until 3 o'clock. So then we'll all go together to our Tambu and on their flight to our perspective.
Yes, thanks very much. Martin, is it still possible to book the staff directly to Pilanza for this one?
Yeah, but still we had a group on our Tambu, so we go in the Conway to wrap
up. Not necessarily. It's not a funeral. We can go at different times.
Every week until Friday 9:30.
What time?
9:30.
The flights leave 9:30.
From Cape
Town. No, that's very late.
No, we'll be a little bit
late. No, then stick to the Monday. Okay. So that deals with the travel. Where will we be staying?
At the moment, we are secure a flat in Sun City, my no doubt. So, the following procedure.
Okay.
Of approval.
Okay. Then on Tuesday morning, we have, unfortunately, Honorable Lund, to plead with you that in the hearings, don't try those machines. You always do.
Very addictive.
Okay, we're going to be visiting the Moses Kotane municipality. Members, we have been concerned that many other select committees are also going to that tent to Norway, but they are not going to Moses Kotane. We are the only ones going to Moses Kotane. So there's no duplication should you happen to pick that up. So we will then be going to the municipal offices where we'll have bilaterals with the executive members of the Northwest Legislature that can make it. Honorable Taylor.
Kind of says it's all right, everything but in some problems. Everything is on
the list. Everything is on
the
list. Do they want to go?
Yes, sir.
My colleagues here are putting me under pressure. They're saying you want to go. I thought we good company. Do you want to go, or are you able to? Okay. Then we're going to have a briefing by the Department of Economic Development in the province, Department of Environment, the Department of Conservation and Tourism, and also the Northwest Development Corporation. Remember, we are a joint select committee, which deals with issues of economic affairs, trade industry, and tourism. We don't have to worry about international relations. Mangope is no longer there. It's South Africa. I particularly like this thing about the SEZ, because that's going to be a big thing, that the Minister of Trade and Industry is looking at establishing an SEZ there. And it's going to be important we can start before the establishment, so that when we have the SEZ established, it would help us with our oversight as well. We then will have another presentation at 2 o'clock after lunch. We'll have our lunch at the Moses Kotane municipality. We'll have a presentation by the Mojanala district municipality, which is basically looking at municipal dynamics on economic development and trade and tourism. Then we spent the whole afternoon doing that. So we would have consulted with national government, with the agencies responsible for economic development, and then we would have consulted with the municipalities as well. The next morning, at 10 o'clock, we will meet with the Santati management. We'll have lunch there, and then a very easy afternoon. So, sorry, Honorable Parkis, you cannot be with us. We meet with the Sun City management, then we go into the game park for the rest of the afternoon. I need to say, colleagues, that dress warmly. It can be cold. Particularly when we go to the game park, it may be that we want to see animals are not there at 4 o'clock on the sun. They come out when it becomes cold and when the sun begins to set. So if you want to see animals, you mean that we'll have to stay in the game park until it becomes a little darker. On Thursday, we will have the meeting with Bahasa Bahabela, traditional authority, which is a wealthy authority also involved in mining initiatives and tourism in the province. We will then have the following site visits: the Ivory Hotel, the Rural Cultural Museum. We will look at the rural road infrastructure that is there at the moment, and then we'll go on a site visit to a mall that they are busy building at the moment. It's already linked with this SEZ initiative. Colleagues, note, we're talking about a public meeting with the people in Moreland Village. We are thinking of changing that by rather looking at tourism sites than to have a meeting, by rather visiting sites than to have a meeting with the community. And I've asked both our secretaries to consult. We're going to meet immediately after this meeting to look at that. So it may change, but it may stay as it is now as well. Because we can't go into a province and the ordinary people in that province is not engaged with us. But also, we can't go into the province, listen to the concerns of ordinary people, shake our heads and then leave the province. So we need to decide
strategically what Rupiah is doing. Then on Friday morning, we will visit the Wilhelmsburg Airport, which is the new airport that you will be flying into. It's a new old airport, an old airport that has been properly renovated now. So we would want to see, as members responsible for transport, what is happening vis-à-vis the transport infrastructure at that airport. We know that in Kimberley you have recently opened the Upington Airport, and I may understand it's not viable. So it's the type of things that we want to raise with the authorities at the Wilhelmsburg Airport as well, and hear if there are any concerns they have. Last time, just to conclude on the follow, last time when we did the oversight in Ozone, I went to that Ozone airport. I could not go into the airport because it wasn't part of our program. But the Ozone airport is there for private use. There's lots of people learning how to fly from the airport, and it's not the economic benefits that we are looking forward to. And we want to make sure that Wilhelmsburg doesn't go that way. Wilhelmsburg has got to provide safe transport for people to visit the province of the Northwest. Let me conclude with thanks very much. On the problem, and then on the
long term. Very good. They actually apply schools and the students from across the world that come into the country. It's a very good for the economy doing that way. So it's not a problem the way it's been done at the moment. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying that, yes.
Okay. So then we'll have to debate this for the next round of
course. Let's
see, but we were over at the airport where the flight school is in Oostveren. It's a very well-run airport. The thing is just with SA Airways, Mango, and these type of airways, they've got their certain routes, and that's the only reason why they're not landing there and why it's not really utilized for an airport with those specific standards. Just coming back, you know that there are now direct flights to Pretoria as from this week, yes. So I'm on tourism. This is actually one of
Pretoria.
From Cape Town to Pretoria, there will be, from next week, three flights per day.
And what is
it? I think one of them, which one is that? Yeah, one of them. It was in New 24, so you can pre-utilize that so that we can keep that going.
Okay.
Chairperson, just what I was going to ask you.
Is that your comeback?
just so I can serious note, when you go to the Rustenburg area, at the Marikana area, at the mines, I don't see, we are also on labour. Should we not perhaps somehow look at labour on a labour committee and perhaps just do a site visit? I'm not saying we have to go to the Marikana site where the shootings and things took place, but perhaps as a committee, meet up maybe with stakeholders like the union and maybe like with the mines and find out if everything is now settled, etc., because it's part of our committee work on labour. So it's just a suggestion that we perhaps look at that, because I know my constituents yesterday, I've come upon an electrician from the Rustenburg area, and they're laying off apparently a hell of a lot of people from now on. Going forward. And it's huge layoffs that's coming up in the northwest area, so that you also take notice of that, in the northwest area. So perhaps we must go there up front, you know, and be ample, how will they look after these people that will be retrenched and given packages? Because this is coming up, and I can tell you now as we're sitting here, this will be a problem in the next 7-8 months. So if we can preamble this and go to the mines and ask them, or to the labour unions and ask them, do they have anything else in place for these miners that will be going through the retentions in the next few months coming up? I think that will be maybe a very good part of us on oversight, that we can come back and say, this is what we've encountered, and this is how it will be sorted out. Thank you.
Honourable, very, very good point, Honourable Farber, that we considered, indeed, in our main conference. Which is the start of the weapon myself. And we were advised not to go for two reasons. The first reason is that the mines are busy with very sensitive negotiations at the moment. And if we go there, how they are talking. That's the one thing. The other aspect that we also looked at is to say that the entrenchments that you're talking of, that Russian town is in serious, dire economic situation at the moment, but you would have heard about the possible retrenchments at the moment. And also the impact that is going to have on the economy in the area. And we felt that therefore it is not strategically good for us to go there now. Maybe we need to give the processes an opportunity to pan out and then make our observations. If you make an observation now, the observation is going to be politically noted. And we are not going to get people that are going to engage with us rationally, precisely because we have power as members of parliament. And we said that therefore we will not get what we as a select committee would want to get out of oversight now. And therefore also the remark that I made earlier on to say that there's really many other members of select committees that will be going there. Honorable Pagis, who's, no, so you wouldn't know. Honorable Teve, you might know. Are there any of the other select committee members that will be going to Rastenberg? Just before I give you the chance to start.
No, thank you, Chair. That's why I was waiting for you in Dallas. You see, the part of the problem that we were raising the other time we were speaking, see, this flooding of the select committees to Northwest. Mm. If you look at your program, you will realize that almost all the committees are going to Northwest. You have learned a mineral select committee, which mining remains one of their key responsibilities, going to the very area that you are interested in. And because of the misalignment that we don't want to create, we don't want to have a situation where one committee comes today and the next morning there's another committee coming. Because to people we are all one unified party. And therefore it will be cautious on our part to also allow them to go there, do their part. But of course we can add whatever particular moment that the committee decides that look, the select committee has gone there, done their job on the part of labor side, how do we then go there and do our own oversight? The only thing that when you have, the other thing was about the configuration gap of the committees. So remember that in provinces you don't have the same alignment as we have here. In the Northwest, for instance, you have economic development falling under finance MEC. You go to housing, you have economic development standing alone, separate. So if you go to Northwest now, the appropriation committee would want the MEC of finance to be in their own committee. We are visiting the airport which is falling under her own jurisdiction. We would want her to come and account to us. So those things are issues that we should take into account and say, what is it that we are going to be doing? The implication is that, Honorable Father, we might go there and find that the team that needs to be working with us is going to be very situated. But however, we are ready to be there, Chair, and make sure that we take into account whatever that is raised by Honorable Father.
It's going to be the last comment on this, then we're closing the meeting. Honorable Father.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I hear what you and Honorable Gerard is saying, but we must understand as well that Labour is one of our core committees. And we cannot, because other select committees are going there saying we don't want to interrupt in the mining committee, because mining are their core function, not Labour. Labour are our core function, not any other committees. So it will be irresponsible for us to say that we don't want to go because of other committees that might be coming. That is unfortunately not staying on my television set at the moment. So what I'm saying to you is that if there are labor issues, then it is our duty as Parliament to go and address it. And I will stand by that it should be obviously a political issue. We should go and find out about the intentions, maybe just we must be sensitive on the type of role players that we engage with. That I can agree with, Chairperson. But that we cannot go with the blindfold and blinkers on and say, okay, wait, we don't want to go there because we might see problems.
then we are doing our job. And for me, we have to, this is why we've got this oversight. We have to go and see where the problems are, how we can help solve them, if we can solve them. Maybe the sensitivity issue, I 100% fully agree with you. I'm not just talking specifically about London mines, but there will be other mines in those areas that have got exactly the same labor issues. We need to understand how they will address it. We might not have to talk to the unions, because we all know with the unions, there are different unions and there's a lot of politics inside. But maybe with mine houses, sit and ask them, listen, we are here as Parliament, we understand this is happening, how are you addressing it? How can we as Parliament somehow, on oversight, understand how this will play out at the end of the day? But I really believe that we cannot put up blinkers and say, perhaps other committees will go there, and now because other MECs are doing other oversight. We it's the same that people saying they go to the National Assembly, they're not coming to the NCOP because that's where the things happen. We cannot think like that. We are the Committee on Labour, and we should stand by that. That MECs that are, if it's the MEC of Finance, if he needs to be there, that should be one of his priorities in the Northwest, with due respect. So I really want you to reconsider this, and maybe as you were saying, look at a less sensitive way of not maybe incorporating unions, but rather just going direct to management of mine houses and speak to them about the labour situation that is unfolding in the Northwest. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Papa. We have heard you. Honourable Papa, because you have not spoken, I will allow you. I did rule that we are closing up.
Sir,
okay.
Let me appreciate the opportunity. I think, Honourable Papa, I'm not repeating what you have just said. And then I want to accentuate the point that says sensitivity will remain sensitivity, and there will not be any way to neutralize sensitivity. And I would have agreed with you if you say let's go to Rassenberg, Marigana specifically, to check on the compliance with our legislation in terms of health issues. That's a key issue which members of Parliament, the Portfolio Committee, the Health Committee, must always monitor compliance and the implementation of our legislation. And my precise belief and understanding is any side visit of a program of the Health Committee must have political exercise. And let's share and miss the point. There must be a political necessity. There must be an outcome. There must be a strategy or supreme objective. What is it that you want to achieve with a particular thing?
Okay.
You know? I think on those basis, I would say let's suspend the visit to specifically go in there as proposed, but focus on the content of the proposed program as it is now. That will be my humble submission, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Members, the reason why we presented the agenda to you was so that we could get this type of engagement going. I just want to conclude by saying, Honourable Father, note that on Tuesday, the 18th of August, at 14 hours, we are going to have the presentation by the Bojanala District Municipality. And we did request that district municipality to give us an indication of the regional economy and then particularly of investment and employment. Let's hear from our peers, the politicians within that area, what the issues are. We will discuss this further as the MENCOM that will be meeting now, and we will be taking all your comments into consideration. Thank you very much, colleague, for your participation. And we will be meeting tomorrow. Erasmus, please help us. Where are we meeting tomorrow? and 46. Oh, we're not meeting tomorrow, sorry. We will only be meeting as the select committee again next week, Tuesday. Please, honorable members, we are going to need your attendance next Tuesday because it's important.